This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a Degradation Nation Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio. I am not in the studio with...
Oh, this is Glenn Ayers, and I got to say, Degradation Nation, that has a ring to it.
It does. It's poetry. Poetry in motion. Well, as you know, the reign of His Malignancy, the Mad King 2.0, is upon us, and so we kind of buckle up and... It's a rough road ahead for this one. Remember the words, though, of FDR to help us along the way. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. And that said, we must defend the land and its inhabitants under this administration, the oligarchs, and anti-American freak shows like the new apostolic reformation, especially regarding our forests and all the critters. Go click on that one unless you're in a fearful mood. Dr. Dominic Della Sala, Chief Scientist for Wild Heritage, a project of Earth Island Institute, returns to the show for a look into the past and the future. Oh, it's time to go for our double speak of the week.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and our press secretary, Sean Spicer, gave alternative facts.
Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
Our double speak of the week comes from the National Forest Service in regard to the Telephone Gap Integrated Resource Project in the Green Mountain National Forest. NFS often justifies logging old trees with the claims of, quote, forest restoration or hazardous fuel reduction or resilience, which is doublespeak for forest degradation, higher fire risk, and carbon loss. Where do we get these people, Glenn?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that some more during the interview, but the U.S. Forest Service is really at the center of immense climate crimes. Well, we'll talk about that in the interview.
All right. And with our quote of the week, Chad Hansen will climb on board. The longest logging projects I've ever seen are targeting the last best remaining old growth trees left in the country. We have a rogue agency in the Forest Service that is trying to benefit the logging industry before reforms take place. The situation is rampant as far as I can tell, and at risk squandering a once-in-a-generation opportunity to protect these incredible forests. And that's Chad Hansen, forest ecologist and co-founder of the John Muir Project, to take us into our interview.
Yeah, let me say one thing about Chad Hansen. He just submitted enough signatures to be on the ballot for the National Sierra Club Executive Board of Directors. Okay. And so all of our listeners who are also Sierra Club members, remember that name, Chad Hansen. And he's running with some other radical types to try to bring some more reforms to the Sierra Club, which has not been really leading the effort, especially when it comes to forest protection and at the national level. And we really need a national group to be doing that. So the Sierra Club, NRDC, a lot of those groups really need to, like I said before, double, triple, quadruple our efforts at forest protection. And we need to do that at the state level as well.
Okay, that takes us to our interview.
All right. Well, this is a great interview with Dominic Della Sala. He's been on the show in the past. And, well, so is Chad Hansen on the show in the past. Two great forest ecologists, PhDs, who have really been doing fantastic work around the idea of national forest and forest protection. Dominic is just a hero and of mine and a lot of people's. And so we'll do this interview with him, and then maybe we'll talk about it on the other side. Today on the Enviro Show, we're joined by, we're thrilled to have Dr. Dominic Della Sala, who's the chief scientist for Wild Heritage, which is a project of Earth Island Institute. And Dominic is the author of over 300 peer-reviewed scientific articles, a lot of them, or most of them, about forests and ecology. Also the author of 9 award-winning books, or a co-author of those books. So Dominic, welcome to the Enviro Show. If you would just give our listeners a brief introduction to your bona fides. I've known you for a number of years. You're one of my heroes when it comes to the forest protection movement in the country. And just give us a snapshot of, your career, what you've been doing, and especially what you're doing now, your dedication to dealing with protecting forests in light of the climate emergency.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, guys. I'm blushing here. It's so nice of you to recognize over 4 decades of working on forests. And, you know, I actually started my interest in forests way back when I was a teenager. And I grew up in Brooklyn, actually. And my family had a country home out in the Catskill Mountains. And I went out there collecting salamanders and just started to identify all the amazing critters that I use forest. Fell in love with the place. Did some salamander work in Appalachia as an undergrad. And then I went off into forest in the Western United States and then globally. So I've been at it for a long time, which is why there's so many publications, 4 decades amassing this amazing information on forests around the globe. And I was really riding the wave of conservation biology that was starting in the late 80s. Folks like E.O. Wilson, Reed Noss, Tom Lovejoy, and others that really launched the field and set a number of us off on our careers doing these bio blitzes around the globe, trying to catalog forests before they were cut down and trying to save them. And so I've done this for 4 decades now, mostly focused on North America, but also I spill over globally every now and then because the need to highlight these really important forests around the planet and the role that they're now playing in helping to lessen the impacts of climate change. That's been the subject of my most recent research, is documenting the importance of older forests and large trees in absorbing carbon and helping to stabilize the runaway climate chaos that we're headed for.
Thanks for that background. And I want to start off by talking with you about an article that you wrote for a journal recently about the complete failure of the Biden administration's effort to identify and protect old growth and mature forests on our federally owned lands in the U.S. In the article, you explain, and we'll link to that in our blog, you explain how this came out of an executive order issued by President Biden, but then it got off track pretty quickly, and it resulted in a complete failure of what was an amazing opportunity. At this point, after, you know, we went through 4 years of very anti-environmental malarkey, as Biden would say, there was a chance to change things. And yet, I think because of the agency and intransigence, that didn't turn out. But if you'll explain a little bit about that old growth and mature forest effort and where we're at with that. And then after that, we want to also talk about a larger concept of a recent paper that you were the lead author on about forest degradation. But let's talk about the failure of the current administration and maybe the prospects of the next administration, which, we all feel are pretty gloomy at this point.
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because I've spent a lot of time on that, and so have a lot of folks. I mean, there was just so many comments from the public. Lots of conservation groups were involved in this. There was a lot of energy and campaigning around it that went into it. And we were all very hopeful and optimistic when it first started. And it first started right after Biden was inaugurated back in 2021. There were four of us at the time that got around the table and said, we need to do something big scale on mature and old growth forests, something on the magnitude of the conservation roadless rule that Clinton did in 2000. So that's what we were aiming for. And we got it in front of the White House. There was some interest in it early on. And then a bunch of other campaigns and conservation groups put their shoulder into it. And we got interest all the way to the president's desk on Earth Day 2022, when he signed an executive order directing the federal agencies to inventory for conservation purposes, quote unquote, the nation's mature and old growth forest. Now, the good part of that is, first of all, the president recognized, as we have been saying for many years now, that forests are the lungs of the planet, and they are so critical in helping to slow down runaway climate chaos because they absorb carbon and they give us oxygen. So he got that right. The other exciting part of it was it wasn't just about old growth, because there's so little of that left in the U.S. We've got to heal the forest and recover them by protecting mature, which are only a couple of decades away from acquiring their full old growth characteristics. So they recognize the value of mature and old growth. Where it started to go south was, even in the executive order, they failed to recognize that logging was the chief culprit for why we don't have much in the way of old growth forest in the contiguous United States. They put the blame on insect defoliation and wildfire losses in those forests, which is a totally different process, a natural process, I'll add, compared to logging, which is a degradation of forest. When a fire burns through an old forest, it produces a complex early cereal forest that's incredibly biodiverse. It's just a different community. When a logging operation goes through an old forest, it changes that forest for decades, if not forever. And you lose the biodiversity in those logged forests. So to not reflect that in the executive order was a sign to us that we're not going in the right direction here, folks. And then the Forest Service got wind of it, did their inventory, which, by the way, my team of scientists already published two papers using LIDAR, laser pulse technology coming off of the satellites that could give us three dimensions of forests so that we could classify them as young, mature, or old growth structurally. We already had two publications in the queue, and the agencies just started to do their inventory. They did a good job with their inventory. However, they put all the blame of loss on fire, insects, disease, climate change, and not on logging. And there is nothing we can do about protecting forests from intense wildfires from the standpoint of thinning, for instance. It just makes the situation worse. But we can reduce our emissions from logging and fossil fuel use that is going into the atmosphere and driving these big natural disturbances that we see today. They missed the boat on that. And when we saw that, it was immediate red flag that the Forest Service was just using their status quo logic on forests, that they weren't going to protect mature and old growth. They were going to find an excuse to do commercial thinning operations that would degrade forests instead of protecting them on the scale of the roadless policy that we got in 2000. Now, I had one other thing that in our inventory, our published inventory, we identified over 50 million acres of older forest in the continental United States. And then, of course, there's the Tongass rainforest in Alaska that were at risk to logging. And those 50 million acres should have been put into a protected network of conservation reserves, like carbon reserves, for instance, because of the climate crisis. And that never happened. And it's really unfortunate that it's a missed opportunity. The White House didn't lean into the Forest Service enough. The Forest Service was doing what they could on inventory, but they didn't really have a conservation spine in the way that we saw with the roadless rule. And so we got what I called a nothing burger out of this. It was canceled at the end of the Biden administration, recognizing Trump was coming in. But, you know, I see it as nothing gained, nothing lost, other than we now have the foundation for going forward with old forest protections when eventually we get a new administration that is conservation minded. We could build off of it by making sure we have strong protections and not just a bunch of lip service played to old forest and why they're important for conservation purposes, which is what we got out of the Biden administration.
Well, one of the things that we talk about on the show quite a bit is proforestation. And we're pushing at the state level here in Massachusetts to have that be the kind of the guiding philosophy for the management of our state-owned forests, which add up to about 800,000 acres in the, you know, one of the most densely populated states, especially in the Northeast here. And we haven't been very successful in promoting proforestation, although just recently, our new governor, her administration, did for the first time fund the creation of forest reserves in Massachusetts. So the state put out $5 million to start creating these kind of climate and biodiversity reserves, areas that are off limits. I'm going to say that that's a huge success for the conservation movement, for our pro-forest activism here in the Commonwealth. But we really need to do this at scale. And, you know, $5 million, even though that was a 50% match, that's $10 million, that only covered about 1,400 acres. And that's not at scale. What we need are, we need these large areas, especially the federally owned lands, but also the lands that are owned by states in their state forest system to also predominantly be put into this category of protected to address the climate emergency. I know that you spent a lot of time doing an inventory, like you said, of the most carbon dense forests and the most mature areas of the country. And that seems like that was a very useful outcome from this effort. And if the federal government did that on federal lands, then that should give us enough of a baseline information to start actively promoting this protection concept. And we really need to become a unified effort at this. All the conservation groups have to embrace this idea of permanently protecting, as E.O. Wilson argued, for 50%. We need to get at least moving toward that. Here in Massachusetts, we have about 2% of the land permanently protected. And that's just not anywhere near, obviously, even 30 by 30. It's not near that. We need to get organized and do this on a massive scale. And I think your research really helps with that effort. So I want to give you a lot of credit for the work that you've done. It's just really important. And one of the things that you mentioned when you were just talking is this idea of forest degradation. And you just recently released a paper that deals with that topic. So if we could switch over and you could explain that concept to our listeners and then how that gets measured and the importance of distinguishing between, in Massachusetts here, all we talk about, or all the administration, the government talks about, is always the same phrase, natural and working lands, natural and working lands. They never disaggregate those two pots of land. And therefore, everything gets treated as if it's conserved, but it is all available for logging. And that's what your paper talks about, is logging is degradation, is forest degradation. If you will just talk about that paper and give our listeners kind of a snapshot.
Yeah, I think that the point that you make, Glenn, is spot on. Beginning with proforestation, that is so critical because as forests mature and they develop their older characteristics over time, they get really good at absorbing carbon and hanging on to it for long periods, centuries, if not disturbed by, for example, logging. And then we get all of this basket of ecosystem benefits, if you will, by protecting these carbon-dense forests as they age, because we get clean drinking water, we get biodiversity, we get recreation. All of those values are increasingly in demand in places that are experiencing high population growth, like the Northeast. And people value and love and cherish these forests because they are essential to recreation opportunities. And when you turn on the faucet, the cleanest drinking water is coming from unlogged upstream headwaters. And so those areas absolutely need to be protected, whether on a state level or a federal level, state and federal working together to really get us to the point where we're meeting the 30 by 30 and 50% targets globally by the US contributing into that bucket of protected areas. We're way down below what we need to be. Across the US, only about 12% of our lands and waters have been protected. So when Biden made the announcement that he was going to move the US in the direction of 30 by 30, likewise, we were really excited. And they did some really important marine protected areas and some closeout national monuments on the way out the door, mostly in the West, but they didn't come anywhere near 30 by 30. So another disappointment. And they could have done it if they had given direction to the Forest Service to establish protected areas on the scale of the roadless rule that we got in 2000. And in terms of the issue of what really constitutes naturalness, and I think that's what this paper is about, that you really need to have a natural forest as your baseline or reference condition from which you compare what is happening in the areas that are being managed for whatever purpose. We call those focal areas. So your reference condition are places that have high integrity, mature, old growth forest, intact watersheds. That's kind of your standard. And then you look at that in reference to what is being logged or altered in some form, and then you have a measure of degradation. So I totally agree that these places need to be in separate buckets. They do interact because if you have too much logging in an area, you can actually impact your protected area through edge effects and spillover from the logged areas that change the microclimate along the edge of the forest and make them more susceptible to blowdown and other factors. But be that as it may, you really need to have a distinction. And that's why it really bugs me when I hear them group them together as if there's no difference between a natural forest and a so-called working forest. And if you really want to look at work as a measure of integrity, the intact forests are doing a lot more work than the single focused forests that are being used for products. For example, an intact forest is giving you clean drinking water, recreation, biodiversity, carbon, oxygen, all the basket of ecosystem benefits we get from those intact forests. Those are the true working landscapes because they're multidimensional and they're not singular focused areas that are just pumping out logs.
Dominic, DO here. Isn't the logging industry diminished in the US? I mean, not as much as, like coal mining or buggy whips, but truly not what it once was, albeit perpetuated kind of like by old school bureaucrats and the few big outfits like Weyerhaeuser or whomever hanging on for dear life.
I think the logging industry is multidimensional. There's a lot of different parts to it. So I think on federal lands, it certainly has declined for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the protection of the endangered forest that the public overwhelmingly supports, mature and old growth. But, as they cut, they run. And a lot of these companies are multinationals, so they overcut in one place and then they go and find some developing country that's looking for revenue and assets, and they overcut in those forests. So a lot of the logging companies are transnational and they move around the landscape until they've depleted the resource or converted it over into an industrial landscape. And we see this across the globe. It's profit maximizing and at the expense of the basket of ecosystem benefits that we get from multidimensional older forests. They make it singularly focused on profit maximization.
Dominic, the paper that I'm referring to was just published in the journal Biological Conservation. It's titled Measuring Forest Degradation Via Ecological Integrity Indicators at Multiple Spatial Scales. That's a mouthful, but the paper really provides a tremendous introduction to give everybody a picture of where we're at, especially policy-wise about forest protection. And then you go into kind of the ways that forest degradation can be measured and the ecological ramifications, or, you know, measuring ecological integrity versus forest degradation. And can you explain to us why is that so important that we be able to measure what we're doing? Because like you said, we're lumping these things together. I've even heard foresters refer to protected land as lazy forests instead of working forests in a very pejorative way. And in fact, what you just said is that, you know, it's really those forests that are really working full time. And these other forests that have been degraded, they're not even on the injury timeout list. They're in the recovery mode for decades. You know, it takes decades for forests to recover, and even a century before they get back to the full functioning that an undisturbed forest would have. So can you give our listeners kind of that? How do you measure that? How do you compare those things? And how do people use that information to argue for the protection of forests?
Yeah, you know, it bugs me to see a lot of misinformation out there that's being used to justify logging. I've been on congressional hearings sitting alongside the timber industry claiming that they don't log forest anymore for only the purpose of economics. They're doing it to save the spotted owl in the West, or they're doing it to prevent homes from burning down in the West again, largely. And I just have to kind of laugh inside myself and say, wow, this is not just misinformation, it's disinformation, because they've figured out a way to take a lot of the information and messaging that scientists have used and twist it to their advantage, using language like forest health, resiliency, restoration. They have taken a lot, adaptation, they've taken a lot of the terms that are in the literature and they've twisted it to whatever logging project they need to get out the door. And that's what this paper does. It kind of exposes that and comes up with a way to define degradation, measure it at different scales, whether you're looking at degradation at the national scale, where all countries have to report on their forest condition periodically to the United Nations. They submit reports, and this is a way for countries to report on how much intact forest they have versus how much is being degraded. But it can also apply at the local level. And I'm going to give you an example of a place where it could really help, just to your north, the Telephone Gap so-called Integrated Resource Project. Right there, that's doublespeak in terms of what's going on in the Green Mountain National Forest in Vermont, where the Forest Service is proposing over 10,000 acres of logging and calling it integrated management. And about 85% or so of those trees are most likely mature, 80 years and older. Some of them are over 100 years. So if you're talking proforestation and having a baseline, those are the forests that you need to assess how much degradation is happening at the local level. And yet the agency is just rebranding this as if it's some sort of restorative measure. They're worried that they don't have enough early cereal forest. They're going to restore that, when in fact what they're doing is they're degrading what is so important to people that live in the Northeast in terms of all the benefits that we get from these older forests. This is not restorative. They may be branding it as such, but it's a type of degradation. And that's what the value of this paper does, is it provides a standardized way to define and measure degradation, like what's happening on the Telephone Gap Project in Vermont.
We will link to that paper in the EnviroShow blog. And Dominic, I want to ask you, like, as our closing thought from you, is how do we join together as activists, especially in light of the incoming administration, which we're all dreading, but we also need to be organizing and being even more active. We need to double our efforts, triple our efforts, because things are on the line here. And so how do we take this information and use it and organize around it and become even more active in the forest protection movement?
Yeah, I think that's really essential. And, you know, it's the old saying, live to fight another day. And in the article I did in Manga Bay on why the old growth policy failed, I kind of end it with, I've lived through 2 Reagan terms, 3 Bush terms, so I've seen the worst. I've lived through 2 Obama terms and a Biden term, and have had my heart broken by just how they dropped the ball. But the only way we can go forward is to be united, and that we've got to start drawing some lines in the sand and saying, you know, enough is enough here. You could rebrand these projects as restoration or resilience, but they're really not that. And so we've got to come together as a community, put aside our differences in terms of whether thinning is needed in forest or not, and just unify and protect these places through legal action, through more science, and through protesting, because the next 4 years are going to be incredibly challenging, as they were in the first Trump term. He's got a lot more knowledge behind how to get nefarious stuff done this time. And so we're really going to have to literally circle the wagons around these forests that are so essential for solving the climate crisis.
There it is.
Yeah, well said. Dominic, thanks so much for being on the Enviro Show. And again, for the incredible work that you've been doing for decades, literally, on the issue of forest protection. You're an inspiration to all of us out here in this battle, and we're so grateful to have you on the show and have you as an ally in this ongoing effort at forest protection. But thanks again.
Yes. Yeah, thank you guys. You made my day. Thank you so much.
Likewise, I'm sure. Okay, we're back. I think it's interesting that he was born in Brooklyn. I wonder if he was inspired by the book, and then it was made into a film, that Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Dominic has just been unrelenting in cranking out this kind of pro-forestation analysis and documentation and really doing amazing work. The whole effort that he put into analyzing the oldest, most mature trees across North America. He didn't just do the United States. He also did Canada and Alaska. And so that's amazing work. And we really have to be grateful that he is so dedicated to forest protection. And hopefully we'll have him on the show again in the future. Really, really amazing work.
All right.
Remember, folks, you know, stay active. Action is the antidote to despair.
One more thing would be, listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
And this is Glenn Ayers. Get active.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.